Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill Luff and it's Wendy Snyder. Our friend Patrick McDonald joins us right now to talk about movies. Patrick is the film critic for HollywoodChicago.com. He's also the guy running FilmAutonomy.com. He's the chief guide for Chicago Film Tour.
Isn't he? That would be quicker.
It would be easier to say just what you aren't. What aren't you, Patrick?
What am I not? I am not fully vested.
All right, that's fair. These film tours that you do, the Chicago Film Tours,
yes.
They start out in May, don't they? The first week in May?
Actually, the first week in April,
sir. Oh, that's soon?
Yes.
I didn't know
April
it was that soon.
2nd, 2016. Join us on the tour. 312-593-4455.
For people who don't know, it's where some of your favorite movies have been shot and set here in the city. And everyone I know who has been on the tour loves it. So
this is
the
year.
The tour. Yeah. You're going to do it finally?
I've been dying to.
All right. There's a lot to talk about from the world of films. Number one, this is an interesting story. There's a chance now that we, the movie viewers, will have the opportunity to pay $50 to, instead of going to a movie theater and watching it the traditional way when a film opens up, for $50, they will somehow magically show the film at our house. They will beam it to our television sets at home for $50. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
$50 a year?
No, $50 per film. $50 a movie.
Who's going to do that?
Well, think
Very
about
rich
it.
People.
If you have a family of four going to a movie theater, it's going to cost you
Good
around
point.
That.
But it's a movie theater.
I know. That's the trade-off.
Well, the first thing that pops up to me is how are they going to prevent somebody from setting up a video camera and pirating
Making
the
it,
film?
Yeah.
That's what I don't understand.
Yeah.
Are they willing to take that risk? Because I could see a shop just set up where they come in for the new releases, and the next day the DVD's out on the street or on a website. So I don't,
I have a question.
Wendy has a question, Patrick.
Okay, go ahead.
We just saw The Martian this weekend, past weekend, actually. And I know it's been out for a while, but I was okay to wait to see it. And I think it was $350 at Amazon Video.
There you go.
So why in the world would you pay $50? I guess like on opening weekend or something, maybe?
Yeah, it would always be the same day that the film is released into theaters. That would be your chance to see it at home.
Yes, and the model is that the distributors and the studios would get a cut. And but the scenario they give in this article is that, you know, five people get together and pay $10 each after you get the $150 set box.
And where do you watch it? On the person who has the biggest screen?
Yeah. Yeah, right?
I got a 70-incher. Give me the $50.
All right. That seems fair.
I think Donald Trump has a pretty big screen, is what I've
heard. Who wants to watch a movie with him, whether you like him or not? Really? He would talk through the whole thing.
Get that character out of here. I don't want that character in the movie. Get him out of here.
See that guy? That guy loves me.
I could do that much better. I should be in that movie.
So the
like
trade-off is you don't have to go to the movie theater. You don't have to leave your home. That's good news. But the spectacle of seeing it, see, I'm saddened by the fact that so many people are now watching movies on their telephone or a small screen, because really they're made to be events. You want to see it on the biggest screen possible.
Yes. And, you know, so many people put so much time into making a movie look spectacular on a big screen, only to have it reduced to iPhone viewing on an airplane. I'm going to the theater aficionado, but so many people tell me now that they just cannot stand sitting in a theater.
Theater ass. It's happening all over.
The bigger problem is people talking and texting and barbecuing during the movie. A friend of mine was telling me he saw Mad Max, and he watched it on his phone. And I was making fun of him for watching it on his phone. And then we were talking about the movie, and I said, how about that, the scene with the wheel, where the people were in the giant wheel, and they were making the water come down with the wheel. And he goes, what wheel? What people in the wheel? And then I told him another scene, and he goes, I don't even remember that. Because when you watch it on something so small, the detail's lost.
Yes. Yeah, and Mad Max is made for the big screen, essentially. So maybe you can see my Big Fat Greek weighing 2 on a small screen. But
since you brought that up,
yes,
is the if you watch the trailers for it, they tell you
it looks so good. I didn't see the first one, so that's really stupid of me.
You should see the first one, because the first one I like.
It's really good.
Yeah.
The first one's good.
All right,
it is. But the anticipation that they talk about in the trailer, that people have been waiting and begging for this movie, is that true?
I don't.
You're not sure?
So.
No. Yeah. I want to believe.
That bothers you.
Well, I want to believe it.
An innocence to it, you know. That yeah. It was a feisty little independent film that got an audience because right. Nia Vardalos went to every small town.
Yep.
And really hawked it. And we don't live in that era anymore. And she does as much as she can to still look 25. So,
well, she looks great. She and her story great. Of selling the idea. You know, she went, Nia Vardalos was an actress here in Chicago right. at Second City,
right.
and she had this idea for a play, and she did the play, and then Rita Wilson and Tom Hanks saw it, mm-hmm. and she convinced them to turn it into a movie, and they made a crazy amount of money.
Yeah, the great story about that, of course, is Rita Wilson saw the one-woman show called yeah. My Big Fat Greek Wedding, and went backstage and said, boy, this would make a great movie, and she pulled the screenplay out and gave it to her.
Wow.
It's true.
How about that?
She was ready.
Wow.
She was ready, and that's really the good karma of that whole thing.
But how strange is this? What, even after it was the surprise hit of the year, because it was made on a very shoestring budget,
yep.
independent film, and it did really, really, really well, made a lot of money. So then immediately they turned it into a TV show that just fizzled so quickly.
It's one of the great failures of TV history.
Yeah.
And the onset clashes between Andrea Martin and Nia Vardalos,
yeah.
and then I see Andrea Martin's in the movie. Again,
yeah,
so
playing the aunt.
They must have.
I love her. That's kind of why I wanted to see it.
Well, you should see the first one.
You should see.
You'll love her in that
one.
You
will really like it. Its use of Windex is better than any other film in history.
I love Windex.
Nice
I can't wait
film.
Now.
Oh, you love the Windex scenes.
You and your rocker son can watch it together. It would be beautiful.
Do it. There are phone calls lining up for you, Patrick. Are you accepting phone calls?
I'm accepting
today?
All phone calls all right. except my account.
Creditors, no creditors.
Yes, Tom, right. You are not Patrick's creditor, are you?
No.
Hello.
All right, good.
All right, go.
Then do you have a question?
Yes. In The Fugitive with Harrison Ford.
Yes.
On the parade scene.
Mm-hmm.
Roland Burris is shot in the film in the St. Patrick's Day parade scene. It's got a clear, vivid image of him. He stands right in front of the movie. How did he get himself into that?
Well, he was probably hired as an extra or to give that gravitas of Chicago politician. And one of the payments was getting a good shot. I don't know. I usually.
But if it was an accident, he was found in caught in the footage, they'd have to clear that with him, right?
I would imagine.
Yeah. I think it was an idea of, you know, that was a big film coming to town.
He didn't he never shied away from a camera. If he saw a camera, he would not be embarrassed. He'd be right in front of it.
Who wouldn't want to be in a big Hollywood movie?
Sir? Right.
Well, thanks for pointing out an Easter egg.
That's pretty good.
That happens.
Thanks, Tom.
I like that.
I'm trying to remember in The Fugitive, they used a lot of Chicago news people
right.
essentially playing themselves, didn't they? Didn't Amy Jacobson and
yes.
Jay Levine and a bunch of others?
Well, they tend to do that whenever they have a film. As I recall, the Ed Norton film, and I can't think of the title.
Fight Club?
No, not Fight Club. It was set in Chicago.
The one with Richard Gere.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Primal Fear.
They used a lot of myself. Come on.
Really
I got one
nice.
Word.
Right.
Nicely done.
And they did use local Chicago news people to give it, again, a realistic tone.
Yeah.
And they're actors anyway, aren't
yeah.
they?
Yeah. It's a nice thing to think. Yes, they are, Patrick. All right. Patrick McDonald is here. Film critic for HollywoodChicago.com.
Network news.
Come
shows
on,
anymore.
You don't know that to be true.
All right.
We'll talk more about movies, and if you have a question or a comment for us, or Patrick, 312-981-7200 is the way to do it. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
We're talking movies with one of my favorite guests. He's Patrick McDonald. And how do we find your reviews?
HollywoodChicago.com, FilmAutonomy.com. I just reviewed I Smile Back, the Sarah Silverman drama just released on DVD.
She's, for a comedian, she's done a couple of these very serious roles of
yes.
late, and people, myself included, think she's a pretty good actress.
I was blown away.
Yeah.
I have to say,
she's got
it
some
was
range.
A real tough role, too. About a mental breakdown, diary, mad housewife sort of thing.
Yeah. It is the spring holiday season, Patrick.
Yes, it is.
And you've noticed this, I'm sure. The spring holiday movies, your Easter
yes.
and Passover movies, are not quite as chipper as your Christmas films tend to be. Did you notice that? Is that
yes,
fair?
It's fair to say.
Yeah. Give us a few classics if people want to get in the mood, somber mood. What should they be renting and seeing?
My favorite, and maybe it's the era I'm from, but Jesus Christ Superstar.
It's pretty good, isn't it?
It's my favorite Easter film.
I love that more than anything.
There you are.
I know every song.
Yeah.
Yes.
I really love that.
Yes, and it was done in a time, again, no showy special effects or just a basic rendering of that great rock opera. And several of the original rock opera singers are in the movie, such as the Mary Magdalene and...
Yvonne Elliman?
Yes, Yvonne Elliman. Yeah. Thank you very much. And
Ted Neely?
Yes, who we had in the studio.
He was up...
Ted Neely was awesome.
A year and a half ago.
Just an awesome
I made
guy.
Him laugh because I said, because he's still playing the role of Jesus,
yes,
even
he
though
is.
he's 68 years old. And I said, because of Jesus' advanced age, the Last Supper is now held at 3 o'clock. And he enjoyed that very much.
He was really nice.
He was great.
It was an honor to see them because really, I had that LP and
yes.
I played that double album like nonstop. I should be in a production of it. I could play every role.
It was Andrew Lloyd Webber, right? Wasn't that who did the music for?
Yes, Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice.
Right.
And Ian Gilliam of Deep Purple played Jesus.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And Ted Neely did, you know, he became the other, he did it on Broadway and took over the role.
Right. All right, so that's a good one. If you're looking for holiday films, Jesus Christ Superstar is good. I guess you'd have to include the Ten Commandments. It's on every year. And
yes.
It's so funny. There's something about that movie. I know every frame of it, and yet when it's on, I can't help but watch it on television.
And also, you know, one of the things about the spring movies, the Easter movies, the Passover movies, if you will, it's almost, and this might be going away, of course, but it was almost a tradition to sit around and watch these movies as they came on, because they always sort of were close to Easter weekend, like the Ten Commandments,
mm-hmm.
And you know, maybe in the age of video that has changed, but there is a sort of a homey feeling about those films.
There is, isn't there?
And I think that's why you gravitate to them again.
There was something about, at the time, the special effects, because they were groundbreaking by today's standards.
Right.
They're so simplistic and almost laughable in scenes. But back then, when this movie was made, when the Ten Commandments was made, that was state of the art.
Sure, and that was a big screen epic. And when the parting of the Red Sea occurred,
yep.
There it was.
Yep, it's because of that movie. Patrick, Wendy will tell you this time of year, I always use the phrase "So let it be written, so let it be done." I like to say that a lot. Thanks to that movie.
I love when you do it.
Yeah, it's fun.
I know
it's
summer's fun. Coming when I start hearing that.
Yep, I will say that a lot. And look for a young Lily Munster in the Ten Commandments.
Oh.
Yvonne DiCarlo
shows
up in a scene or two.
Well, you know, of course, the Billy Crystal bit about Edward G. Robinson.
Yeah, see, it's the Ten Commandments.
Who's your
Messiah now? Right.
Oh, that's right.
Well, he was so synonymous with gangster movies for so long, and then all of a sudden, Edward G. Robinson's in Ten Commandments, and he's semi-believable, you know. But
well, Michael Stuhlbarge played him in Trumbull.
Yeah.
Edward G. Robinson as sort of a rat.
Yeah.
Which, you know.
Stuhlbarge?
Yeah,
Stuhlbarge.
Well, they're making names way crazier than when we were growing up.
That's true.
Stuhlbarge.
And then one more, I guess, if we're going to talk about these movies, that would have to be Ben-Hur.
Oh, yes. I always go back to the SCTV satire of that, too. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that? Where Jesus would make a martini?
Oh, I totally remember that.
Right. They took some liberties with the original script, but that's fine.
But no, Ben-Hur, yes, an epic. The silent version of Ben-Hur is really good, too, if you ever run across it on Turner Classics.
Yep.
That really is... It's
silent? I'm sorry, subtitles?
I have to read those
subtitles.
Cards.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was just silent with no subtitles. It's like, how could you figure out what's going on? How long is it? I'm not watching it.
There you go.
I still remember Red Buttons on a dais once saying, I just saw Ben-Hur and his sister Ben-Him and their younger brother Ben-Gay. Had a huge laugh. Catherine is on the line. She would like to talk Ten Commandments with us.
All right.
Catherine, hi. How are you?
Hi. Great. I just want to tell you that my children, who are all grown up now, we watch the Ten Commandments every year. And one of the things we do is it's a drinking game. Every time they say Moses, you watch how many times Moses.
Hundreds.
We hit the bottle. It's hysterical.
That's perfect. I imagine really everyone's funny. A little bit ripped by the end of the night, aren't they, Catherine?
Of course.
Yep.
Of course.
Happy Easter.
Happy Easter to you.
Thanks so much. Awesome. Now, here, this is curious. Yes. Maybe you can explain to me. This weekend, the Brothers Grimsby opens up. This is Sacha Baron Cohen's new movie. Looks hysterical. However, the producers decided to not screen it for critics. Can that be true?
That is true.
Does that mean it's not good?
We don't know. We have to go and pay our dime and see it ourselves.
It usually
is an indicator that the film is not... they don't want the bad word of mouth the first weekend.
Yeah.
They hopefully that Sacha Baron Cohen can bring him in.
They get that good
opening weekend. Yeah. And if the movie's bad, it'll tail off. But
his films have been, for the most part, praised by critics. Most critics seem to like his work.
Right. And he has a certain cult status, too, that no matter what he does, people are interested in seeing it. So that's why I don't, critics are used as sort of a buffer between the audience and the anticipation. And if it gets good reviews, then they're going to, people are going to crowd to the theaters.
Now, do you know the story
my reviews?
What? Do you know the story? There's a joke in the movie.
Yes.
Concerning Donald Trump I guess is a very unpleasant joke. And that joke has gotten mixed reviews. There's people who think that's one of the funniest things in the movie. There's people that are very upset that they would throw that into a movie.
Is that maybe why it's being screened? Because it's a crucial time now?
I wonder if that could possibly have anything to do with it.
I didn't hear that. What?
I said, I'm wondering if that's maybe why it's not being screened, because it's a volatile time right now. And if there's
a
candidate who could be our next president being made fun of.
Maybe. Well, the studio was talking, as of a week ago, they were talking about pulling that scene or that joke because the audience was so polarized on it. But it's a movie. Take a chance, right?
Interesting.
All right.
That was the one with the Korean guy in it that I loved, with Seth Rogen.
Oh!
The interview.
The interview.
Remember, we were gonna. People wanted
gonna
Sony
war.
To buckle down and not show it.
Right.
I liked that movie.
Did you see it on Netflix or online or?
I streamed it or found it. We ordered it like that weekend, and just everybody complaining about it made me want to see it, I enjoyed it.
Sometimes that kind of publicity is better for a movie, right?
With the subject matter of that one. Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely.
That's Patrick McDonald, film critic for HollywoodChicago.com and FilmAutonomy.com. Don't forget, the guide. He is the guide for Chicago Film Tour also, 312-593-4455 if you're interested. Thank you, Patrick.
Yes.
Patrick has confirmed it, and I guess
this weekend nothing's coming out.
Nothing is coming out, according to Patrick.
We're
out of time.
We'll talk to Ro and Anna next.
And Ro's mean, so we can't run late.
We can't go late. All right. Take care. Bye.